This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. Last Monday, on the 1st of February, Myanmar's military kicked out the governing pro-democracy party, NLD, led by Aung San Suu Kyi. The coup took place about a decade after the military agreed to hand power over to a civilian government. Joining me on the show right now is Aung Kong Myat, a Burmese activist and political commenter currently doing his postgraduate studies in Hong Kong. Welcome to the show, Aung Kong Myat. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good as well. Let's start at the beginning. We've now seen a video which has gone viral on Twitter, and it's mind-blowing, right? Because 1 second, an aerobics instructor was doing an online class, and the next thing you see, military vehicles driving behind her in the background. And the next thing you know, the military had taken over the country. So what happened?
So the coup d'etat followed a rise in tension between the military and the civilian government led by Aung San Suu Kyi. So what happened was that the military accused the government of voter fraud after they claimed they had a press conference in late January, and they claimed that they found 8 million errors in the voter list, which in the election, in the November election in 2020. So the government and the election body claimed that they refused to accede to their demands. The military demanded that the parliament be withheld for a certain time until the voter errors were resolved. Well, of course, the main logic missing in the military's argument is that the errors in the voter list doesn't necessarily translate into voter fraud. Because so in Burma, when you go out to vote, you need to first have your ID card. Mm-hmm. And when you vote, they put you in indelible ink, which cannot be deleted until for a week or so. So, the military basically have no evidence of voter fraud, but they use this, the errors they claim they found in the voter list, they use it as an excuse to stage coup d'etat against the elected government. So this is generally what happened. And of course, what's behind the scene that we could see is that the party backed by the military called USDP, they had a huge loss in this election. They won even less parliamentary seats than the past election in 2015. So I think that part of the equation is that they are pretty upset with their loss in the election, and the generals were convinced that there must have been voter fraud for their proxy party to suffer a huge defeat.
Can you tell me what the situation is like in Myanmar right now? Because I've been in contact with a couple of journalists and activist friends. Many are afraid to speak their truth on mainstream media. Scrolling through Twitter, I see a lot of activists telling people to use Signal instead of WhatsApp. A lot of things like these are going on. Can you shed some light on what exactly is the situation now in Myanmar? What have you heard from your friends and family over there?
Everyone is very afraid. So we're very afraid of the parts where the military rules. Because we are quite familiar with how Orwellian it can be. So everyone becomes conscious. In my contact list, I already have Signal and Telegram. But in the past week, I've got like all my contacts on Signal, Telegram. Even elderly people who will be like normally they won't be very familiar. They won't be very tech savvy. Mm-hmm. But right now, everyone is on these secure messaging platforms for the reason that the military want to control everything, and they don't accept any forms of opposition to their rule. To be honest, the coup d'etat took everyone by surprise, so we were not able to prepare in advance for anything. So in the first day, everyone was shocked. And on the second day, the beating pots and pans campaign started because people needed a way to express their dissent freely and safely, so that they choose beating pots and pans, which is traditionally a way to drive the evil spirits, so to speak. And well, of course, in this case, the military is the evil spirit. And so we want to get rid of the military. And so that's what people were doing. And the protest started yesterday and today. So I got a call like just a few minutes ago from my friend who is a student union leader, and they've been leading the protest. So the crowd is bigger, much bigger than today than yesterday. And people are a lot more involved with the calls. And they've been calling the government to release their elected leaders. And they've been also calling the military governments to give power back to the civilian leaders. And they've been demanding democracy and the end of the military rule.
Myanmar has had a complicated history with the military and democracy, right? I mean, there was a coup in 1962. There was another one in 1988. But what's the difference between what's going on now as compared to the 60s and the 80s? I know you may not have been born at that time in both those eras, but perhaps based on what your family members have talked to you about or based on the research you've done, what's the difference?
The difference really is that this coup d'etat have no legitimate reason. Nothing at all. So in 1962, there were a lot of unnecessary tensions between political parties and politicians. So the military wanted to take a role to clean up everything and then go back to their role. I mean, that was their excuse. And they have an ideology in mind. They want to implement socialism in the country because socialism, of course, was popular in the Cold War era in the Global South.
That's
so
right.
So they have one goal in mind, and their goal, you could say, is ideological at least. In 1988, there were lots of civil unrest responding to their socialist government, their mismanagement of the economy and everything. So I mean, you could probably say that the goal of the 1988 coup d'etat was law and order. But this coup d'etat has no reason at all. I mean, there were no protests. I mean, there was just the civilian government was about to start their first session of parliament, where they're gonna vote who are gonna be the president and so on and so forth. And so they decided to stage a coup because they believe the civilian government leaders are not respectful of the military demands. It's basically their ego working, like, I mean, pushing them to do all these irrational decisions. Because, like, let's be honest, I mean, the coup d'etat isn't good for the generals either. Like, these generals, they're rich. They own from telecom company to beer, cigarettes, everything, like all the consumer goods. Mm-hmm. But it is not good for their business, but they do it anyway. I mean, it's not good for ordinary citizens like us, but they do it anyway. So to recap, this coup d'etat really, I mean, there is no legal basis on this front either, because in the constitution, it is said that only the president can transfer power to the commander-in-chief, which is the head of the military. But they just arrested the president and made the vice president, who is appointed by the military, as the president. This is entirely constitutional. I mean, legal experts can say more about it. But yeah, I mean, the gist is that this is unconstitutional and lawful, and the military just did it, because in my opinion, the fact that the civilian leaders resisted their demands, it hurts their egos. So they did that.
And I think to put things into perspective, to understand a little bit about what went down over the past week or so, we have to maybe rewind the clock and zoom in on the 80s. This was when the pro-democracy movement was gaining tremendous momentum under the leadership of Aung San Suu Kyi. Can you talk to me about this movement that started in the 80s?
It was a little controversial to suggest the leader was Aung San Suu Kyi because it was started by student unions. It has economic background. So the country was included in the least developed country, also called LDC. And a lot of student leaders, when the news broke out to the student, there was a lot of concerns among them. They were very angry with the military, the BSPP, the party backed by the military, which ruled the country. They were very angry with their economic management. And when a fight broke out at the tea shop after that, then the students protest against the government. And then there was like nationwide demonstrations, uprising. It was completely coincidental that Aung San Suu Kyi was in Burma back then, and she was coming to visit her ill mother, who was critically ill. But she wasn't interested in politics at first because, she majored in literature and things like that. She didn't study, say, for instance, economics or political science. So that's not really her interest, but because of the various like accidents, then she became involved. And well, because of her father is an independence leader. People gradually accepted her as the leader to lead the movement. But by the time Aung San Suu Kyi emerged as a leader, it was quite late, and the country was in such a turmoil. You don't have like any bureaucracy, and people are paranoid. There have been crimes in the neighborhood because when strangers visit the neighborhood, people don't trust them and desire to arrest or even sometimes behead the strangers. And there were so many stories of civil unrest, basically.
Why did the top brass at Myanmar at the time eventually give in and take baby steps towards something resembling a proper democracy? What changed their mind?
They probably don't have any strategies. They were desperate to get rid of the civil unrest or mass opposition to their government. So they desired to agree to elections. But after the election results were out, they refused to give power to the NLD, which was formed after 1988 revolution as a political party with Aung San Suu Kyi and other former generals in the NLD.
Then eventually they did give in, and that's when the conceptualization of the new constitution came about, right? Can you tell me a little bit about this new constitution? There's a clause in the constitution that said that at least 25% of the seats in the legislature must go to the military no matter what. Yeah. Am I correct? Can you talk to me about this?
Yeah, that is so. What is so strange about this coup? Because this constitution that we all operate under is the child of the generals. They drafted it, and it was the generals and their advisors, of course, who wrote the constitution. This is what they call disciplined flourishing democracy. They are bureaucratic jargon. They emphasize the role of the military in the constitution, and they wanted to do whatever they wanted. And Aung San Suu Kyi and other civilian leaders decided to essentially play their games, you know. So when you can make up your own rules for the game, generally speaking, you should be able to contend with the results. Because whatever their proxy party win or lose the elections, the military still have 25% in the parliament. So that means they can block any changes to the constitution, but the civilian leaders can pass laws. And the military still have power in the judiciary and executive. So for instance, they control Ministry of Home Affairs, which in turn controls the police, and General Administration Department, which is very powerful department because it essentially runs bureaucracy in Burma. They have their power in almost like all the three branches of the government, but still they were not content with their own rules. So my guess is that the blender they made is they decided to run the election is winner takes all election. It is not proportional. So that's why their military party suffered defeat even in the areas where there are military barracks, there are military soldiers. I mean, they even lost elections in some of those areas. And that's probably when they realize they've made a huge mistake. Now the NLD, led by Aung San Suu Kyi, is probably going to rule the country forever. And the population, I mean, to be honest, these guys, these generals, they are quite self-deluded. They thought people like them. They thought they are going to win the election somehow. And particularly in this year, because of COVID-19 and other things like genocide, the NLD's government performance isn't that good. But still, people like the civilian side, the pro-democracy side, than the military ones. And I think the result, the coup d'etat shows that the generals thought they made a mistake, and they are no longer satisfied with the way things are running, because they believe that they want more power than they have now.
All right, Ong, we do need to go for a quick break. I'm speaking with Ong Kong Myat, a Burmese activist and political commenter who's currently doing his postgraduate studies in Hong Kong. We are talking about the military takeover that's going on in Myanmar right now. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and I'm joined by Ong Kong Myat, a Burmese activist and political commenter currently doing his postgraduate studies in Hong Kong. And what we are doing right now is having a chat on the takeover, the military takeover, that's going on in Myanmar right now. So do you think one of the reasons we are where we are right now, because NLD and Aung San Suu Kyi also became rather problematic in their own right? Aung San Suu Kyi, for example, supported the military's human rights abuse against the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. It was mass genocide and rape, to the point where Rohingyas are constantly trying to seek refuge in other countries, including here in Malaysia. Do you think this lent legitimacy to the military?
That's sort of a hard question. For Aung San Suu Kyi, I think she really made a fatal mistake. All this talk about they label the process of making military their friends as national reconciliation, and that obviously failed. I think there are two parts. So first part, all this Aung San Suu Kyi's the friends for the military in the Rohingya genocide. I think she genuinely is nationalist in some respects. Mm-hmm. She genuinely believes the military did not commit atrocities against Rohingya Muslims. And I believe that is the reason she stood up for the military. And on the other hand, that actually works for her. The politicians talk about the ICJ lawsuit. The Burma is right now facing ICJ lawsuit for Rohingya genocide. Because she represented Burma at ICJ, people had a lot of support for her. They have even more positive feeling towards her. People popularly refer to her as Mother Sue in Burmese. Mm-hmm. So they really see her as their mother, like the mother of the country, who will protect them against foreign aggression. But right now optimistic is that I've been seeing it on social media, Facebook, Twitter, that people started to realize that well, maybe the atrocities committed by the military towards the Rohingya may be true. I've been seeing some, I mean, not just Rohingya, ethnic minorities in general. There have been several viral posts on Facebook from Buddhist Burma who've been saying, oh, I apologize to the ethnic minorities. I have not been, you know, I've been silent on the issues you were facing. I'm sorry about that, et cetera, et cetera. So I am sort of inclined to say that well, people are slowly waking up to the crimes of the military, not just again. I mean, the crimes that are not just against the, against them, that are also against the crimes committed against ethnic minority as well.
Let's talk about the 2020 elections, where NLD won more than 80% of the parliamentary seats available to be contested. It was the biggest victory for NLD in history, right?
Right.
Was the last elections the straw that broke the camel's back for the military people?
The military was expecting to win some votes in the central region of Burma, where there were lots of Buddhists, Burma. Because, I mean, if you look at the strategies of the military parties, USDP, they were just stroking Islamophobia. They were stroking Buddhist nationalism in every way possible. That's really their election strategies. They want to portray themselves as the party for the race and religion. That means Burma, Buddhism. And they've been trying to raise that message. And they also hope to win a lot, like all the seats in the areas dominated by the military towns, etc. But, well, obviously that didn't work out. But that didn't work out in 2015, and that didn't work out in 2020 even more so. And part of the reason is that people really have, we really like Aung San Suu Kyi, that is for Buddhist Burma populations. And, well, like, I mean, if you ask anybody on the streets, their respect, their admiration for her is enormous. And for ethnic minorities, well, like, I mean, that is what surprised me. NLD won a lot of seats, most of the seats in the areas dominated by ethnic minorities too. I think the reason might be that the NLD was trying to improve infrastructure, road, bridges, electricity in those areas. And the people responded to the development positively.
The military announced on national television after the coup that they will remain in power for 12 months. Now, right. 12 months in and of itself sounds incredibly bleak, especially so after listening to you, your friends and family are going through, what the people in Myanmar are going through. But now I guess the bigger question is, do y'all think the military will actually step down and restore the constitution after 12 months?
Not at all. Not at all. Because there have been historical precedents. So last time they took power, that took more than more than 20 years for them to give the power back. Right now they promise 1 year. I mean, even if they genuinely believe they're just going to control the country for 1 year, things are not looking good for them. Well, like, I mean, if you ousted elected leaders, people are not going to do anything. Like, nobody is willing to just stay business as usual. That's really not an option. They face a lot of pressure internationally, and a lot of pressure from the people. Well, right now, people are going out on the streets, led by student unions, labor unions, civil servants, almost everyone. And at night, every 8 p.m., you hear the sounds of beaten pots and pans at every household. So I think right now is the time they are slowly realizing that their plan might not realize. And they've been hoping to outperform the NLD government in terms of economy, in every way. But obviously, things are not looking good. Well, right now, we don't have the internet. The businesses will suffer without the internet. The banks could not run properly without the internet. And a lot, like entire economy is now on the internet.
That's right.
It's really hard. It's not 1990 anymore. So it's going to be hard. If the more repressive they are, the more everyone will suffer. And from what I see, things are leading that way. So people are going out on the streets. What are they going to do? Well, the sensible choice will be to give the power back to their civilian governments who receive people's mandates. But it doesn't look like they are going that way. They are their generals who don't want to look as soft. So they want to like show themselves as tough men. So strongman politics. So it's really, things are not really looking good for them either. Their businesses will suffer. And they will also face serious consequences in the international field, in the international community as well.
What can the people of Myanmar do? What can the people around the world do? Because now you're saying there's no internet. It's difficult. People in Myanmar on the ground, journalists, activists, they're talking, they're speaking out less because there's no internet. So what can we do to end this military regime and reinstate democracy?
First step is the flow of information, freedom of information. That's really important for activists, journalists, everyone who is helping Burma. So the international community should really make sure that people can communicate with each other effectively without any harassment from the military. And secondly, there needs to be tougher action from the international community, not just because of the action they did now. And they should also think about the actions they could do in the future. Let's look at the human rights abuses. If the military is in power, the human rights abuses will be even worse. What is their final solution for Rohingya, for instance? In the government, they appointed several politicians who don't have, who have very hostile views toward Rohingya Muslims. So if they are still in power, the rest of the Rohingya, the Romanian Rohingya, I think that is like 60,000 Rohingyas in the country, they'll be expelled completely. So the international community need to think about the future events that could unfold if the military is still in power. And it is not just about Rohingya. There have been other ethnic minorities. They will also face serious consequences because of the military. And, we have enough history of the past military crackdown on peaceful protests. And, as a citizen and as someone whose friends are now out on the street, I don't really want to see the history repeated. I don't really want to see my friends and family members cracked down brutally by the military. And by cracked down, I mean they actually shoot the civilians in the past, in 1988, 2007. They actually shot civilians. They ordered their soldiers to shoot at the civilians who don't have any arms. All they have is their own voice, their desire to have democracy. I'm really concerned. I couldn't sleep. I could not really do anything properly because I am really anxious that they are going to do that if the international community could not give enough pressure to them. By international community, I mean not just the UN. The ASEAN plays important role as well. So far, the ASEAN leaders, they don't put out any strong statements against the coup d'etat. That is really concerning as the political unit. If whatever happens to Burma, that is not good for the ASEAN community, as seen in the Rohingya genocide, that really contributes in immigration issues in Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia. So if this continues, I believe it will be really, really getting worse. So before things get worse, the international community needs to get themselves together and hold the military to account and ask them to treat the civilian protesters, peaceful protests, with respect. And they should also ask the military leaders to respect the democratic choice made by the people.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Ong Kong Mia. I hope that by hook or by crook, the military regime is stopped and democracy can be swiftly reinstated.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
That was Ong Kong Myat, a Burmese activist and political commenter, currently doing his postgraduate studies in Hong Kong. And we were talking about the military takeover that's going on in Myanmar right now. So if you missed any part of this conversation or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or even subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. You just have to search BFM Live and Learn. Once again, I'm Dashrin Johan, and you've been listening to Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.